Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Each day, America's opioid crisis claims 115 lives. Now, proposed legislation in Congress, paired with increased funding from Washington, along with personal attention from the president, aims to prevent abuse and save lives. A group of eight senators have unveiled a bipartisan bill that would bump up funding for addiction treatment and prevention by roughly $1 billion. It's called the CARA 2.0 Act, billed as the sequel to the Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act of 2016. Dr. Dan Heineman is Vice President and Medical Officer for Sanford Health Network. He's serving his second term as a delegation chair for the American Academy of Family Physicians delegation to the AMA. And he joins us now on the phone. Dr. Heineman, thank you so much for being here.
Good afternoon. It's my pleasure.
And we're trying to get South Dakota Attorney General on Marty Jackley on the phone after you. So thank you so much for coming on a little bit early as well. Sort of moved you up at the last minute. And we appreciate your willingness to do that for us. I'm wondering if we could start with a little bit about Sanford Health Network and what all that encompasses. Tell me about your role.
Sure. I'm the medical officer for 22 small critical access and two little larger hospitals in the Sioux Falls market. Gives you an idea. The geography involved Jackson, Minnesota on the east, so about 2.5 hours east on the interstate. We're Winter, South Dakota up here, Chamberlain out on the west, Aberdeen up north, and then I swing down to Vermilion and Sheldon, kind of on the south, and then a number of facilities in between. So I work with those physicians, those physician practices, and those small hospitals in that area. And I work with several other medical officers within the Sanford Health umbrella in our four regions. So.
And now tell me about this, your role with the American Academy of Family Physicians. How does that work?
Well, I've been a delegate to the AMA House of Delegates for a number of years through the AAFP delegation, the American Academy of Family Physicians. Organizations that represent other members in the Federation of Medicine have the opportunity to have representation at the House of Delegates, as do state chapters. So I represent family doctors through the American Academy of Family Physicians on that delegation. And for the last couple of years, I just was reelected this last November to be the delegation chair again for another year. And we have 18 delegates that represent family medicine at the House of Delegates. So.
All right. So we, as South Dakotans, are probably hearing about or reading about the opioid crisis almost every day now. There's some sort of new news. On March 1st, the president had an opioid summit at the White House. There's this new legislation proposed by lawmakers. How often are you engaged in conversations about opioid abuse in the region?
Well, I think not so much opioid abuse, but how can we as clinicians assure our patients and the public that we're doing everything we can to help with this issue. It's been around for a while. It's gotten a lot of press in the last 2 to 3 years, primarily because those medications were finding their way into the hands of people who were misusing them. Unfortunately, some of those are young people who believe since it's a prescription drug, it must be safe. It is not, if not used properly and under the exact prescribing that has been. I think clinicians have been, we've been part of the problem. There's no doubt we've over-prescribed these medicines, primarily because we thought they were safe. Lots of patients have chronic pain, and pain for a variety of reasons. We probably misprescribed those medications for some of those conditions in the past, have now recognized that what we thought was appropriate is not appropriate any longer. And so we need to rethink the way we use these medications. That's part of the reason why Sanford, 2 years ago, developed what we call our Controlled Substance Steering Committee, which is a group of physicians from all of Sanford. It gets together on a monthly basis and talk about what we can do, and we've developed guidelines, we developed prescribing recommendations, we have conversations with physicians about their prescribing habits. So that gives you some idea of what we've been doing.
When we look at the legislation that's coming out of Congress or some of the statements that are coming out of the White House, for example, do you think that's helpful and it's moving the conversation forward and we see a president who cares about this issue and is willing to address it, money coming, you know, in the direction of, you know, treatment facilities? Is this all a positive move towards solving a complex problem, or do you see missteps that, you know, where you wish people would understand, you know, this or some other a detail that we're really not, is not as widely reported?
No, I think these are all positive steps. Anytime we get a national conversation about an issue, I think that's a good thing, especially when we have that national conversation around treatment options. Part of the problem and part of the struggles that clinicians have now when they try to address these issues is that many of their patients, while they may not be addicted, have developed a dependence to these medications. And getting them off of these medications may not necessarily be easy. So anytime we look at dollars aimed at treatment and those types of services, that's a positive. Shedding light on the issue in terms of what do we need to do to be a little bit more responsible about moving forward with some changes. Transparency is good. And so all of these, I see all of these things as a positive. My only concern with all of these, and it's in that federal legislation, there is a requirement for restricted prescriptions. My only concern is if we start to layer lots of education, lots of requirements, lots of required responsibilities on physicians who prescribe these medications, physicians will stop prescribing. Because you do need a DEA number, a Drug Enforcement Agency number, to prescribe a controlled substance, but it's not required to prescribe other medications. And so I would be of concern that physicians may say, fine, it's just too difficult to use these medications anymore, so I'm going to stop prescribing them. Mm-hmm. Then we pile that responsibility on fewer and fewer physicians who are comfortable prescribing these medications. And so it does get a little bit, I think, burdensome for some physicians. And so I think we need to be a little careful about what we require of them.
Right. And that would be an increased scrutiny for those physicians as well, which
correct
might make, you know, might make their thought process more challenging for them. I've thought of this, too, as I read the coverage on this bill, this 3-day limit on initial opioid prescriptions. And you sort of hear this, you know, this initial limit being talked about a lot. And it seems to me that for some people with it seems to me like that's a pretty cookie cutter approach, you know, to use a cliche there. Do you think that a 3-day just sort of, you know, general best practices, no more than 3 days, is a good place to start? Or is it a cookie cutter approach that really limits a physician and a patient in dealing with, you know, some pretty serious pain?
I think that it's limiting. I think everybody would get a 3-day prescription, whether they needed it or not, or a 7-day prescription, if that's what the limits were. I think there's differences. If I break a femur or break a major bone or have a major operation, and my pain is going to be different than if I had a minor procedure or a small injury. So I think that what we need to help our colleagues in medicine understand is be judicious. Think twice about how much you are prescribing. Try to be as judicious as possible, whether that's 3 days, 5 days, or 7 days. Try to be judicious in the use of these medications. Patients need to understand that physicians may limit what they prescribe, and that might require them to come back. They need to be willing to also take some responsibility in responsible prescribing and understand that my physician or my clinician, because it could be an advanced practice clinician as well, may need to see me back to assess where I'm at with my pain so that I understand, so that I can help my prescribing clinician understand what's going on with my pain. Because if it is continuing, maybe there's something else that needs to be done rather than just write another prescription for pain medication.
So a couple questions to follow up on that. First, what else might need to be done? What are some of the other options that can be engaged?
Well, can physical therapy, can cognitive behavioral therapy, can massage therapy, can a variety of things be used in helping somebody control pain, not necessarily getting rid of pain, but control pain so that the individual is in control rather than the pain being in control. I think there are other medications that can be prescribed for certain kinds of pain disorders. Migraine headaches, for instance, don't respond necessarily very well to opioid pain medications. There are better types of therapies for migraine headaches. Diabetic neuropathy or nerve pain, there are better medications for that than just opioids. So I think there are lots of options that are available to clinicians in terms of making sure that they're using what's appropriate for that individual patient's pain needs. Sometimes it may be a controlled substance, but avoid the long-acting controlled substance. Use a shorter-acting medication, which is more appropriate and maybe less problematic for some patients. So I think there's lots of things that can be done in the evaluation and recommendation of a course of treatment for an individual with pain.
The other thing that came to mind when you were talking is this notion of, you know, really kind of coming back and reconnecting with your physician, maybe after that 3-day period, sort of seeing what else needs to be done. And you work with a lot of, facilities that serve a lot of rural people. There's a different challenge than if you live in Sioux Falls and you have to go back 3 days than the challenge if you live miles away from your provider and need to go back. So that sort of points to this notion that we need to be flexible in each situation, doesn't it?
Correct. It does. That's why I think we need to be a little more open to the unintended consequences of, say, a 3-day limit or a 7-day limit. At the same time, clinicians need to understand, you know, I can't just write a 30-day supply that's unlimited.
Right.
It's got to be reasonable, and we got to be thinking about it. We need to evaluate our patients for other risk factors that might put them at risk for developing some tolerance to these medications. Again, using short-acting rather than long-acting forms of these medications, making sure that our patients aren't on a lot of other medicines that can complicate their pain program, if you will. A class of medications that's commonly prescribed together with opioids are benzodiazepines or sedative anxiety medications. They can aggravate the potential problems. We need to make sure we understand all of the medications that patients are on.
And what about treatment for folks who are already struggling with or who are going to be struggling because they have to move toward getting off some of the or making a transition from their current treatment plan to something else? What are the best ways to handle that?
Well, I think many clinics now have embedded psychologists or social workers that can help with some of that. Having access to more treatment programming, more treatment services, maybe a different kind of treatment service. Maybe it's not a 1-month-long inpatient service, but having more availability for outpatient therapies for patients who are struggling with this. You know, a lot of times what we find are patients who have a co-current mental health illness seem to get into trouble quicker with these medications. So I think understanding that and having those services available are also a big help. So all of those things, I think, are really important to make sure that our patients have access to those.
Dr. Dan Heineman is a vice president and medical officer for Sanford Health Network, and he's also serving his second term as delegation chair for the American Academy of Family Physicians delegation to the AMA. Thank you so much, Dr. Heineman. We'll see you next time. We appreciate your time.
You're more than welcome. You have a great day.